Hello, welcome back. And in this section, we're going to be talking about the idea of conscious and unconscious and what NLP thinks about the difference between the two and how that can affect the way that we think and the way that we operate, and also how we can take a little bit of control over it. Because the difference for me between conscious and unconscious is fairly clear, but really, really important. So whatever you're thinking about right now is in your conscious mind, and everything else that's going on, because there is a lot of other stuff going on, is in your unconscious mind. And I call it unconscious. Various people call it subconscious, although I kind of think that subconscious kind of sounds a little bit like less important, if you like, subordinate kind of fits in with that. And I think that unconscious is actually more important in terms of the way that we behave and the behaviors that we exhibit, the way that we think, than the conscious thought processes are. A lot of people in NLP call it other than conscious, which I kind of get where they're coming from, but for me that's a little bit too complicated. So I just use the word unconscious. And we're going to look now at how that all kind of fits together, because to me it's really, really important to understand what's going on at that unconscious level. Because for me, for NLP, NLP is all about taking what you do unconsciously and making it conscious. Because when it's unconscious, it's a reaction, you don't have a choice. But when it's conscious, you can control it. A little bit like riding a horse. So the horse has all of the power and the ability to run fast, to jump hedges, swim rivers. It's got really powerful, it's four legs, so it doesn't fall over very often. And so I think about that as being the unconscious, because it's not very logical and in terms of the way it thinks. And that the rider is the conscious. So the conscious, the rider decides where the horse is going to go and how fast it travels and whether it jumps hedges or it doesn't jump hedges and so on. The problem, of course, is that to be able to persuade the horse or get the horse to do those things for you, you have to be quite a good rider. And so the more that you understand about the unconscious or the horse, the more chance you've got in making it go in the direction you want it to go in. So let's have a look at what I'm talking about here in a little bit more detail. So what we've got here, and I'll just draw this, is if you imagine that's a C, and I'll ask you what you think that is. And if you said Titanic, then obviously the 4 years I spent at art college weren't wasted after all. So if that's the Titanic, then what does that represent? Yeah. That represents the iceberg. And as I'm sure you all know, the majority of an iceberg is below the surface. So whether that's 9/10 or 7/8 or whatever figures people choose to use, the reality is that the majority of the iceberg is below the surface. And as far as the Titanic was concerned, it was the bit below the surface that had more of an impact, literally. Sorry, spoiler alert if you haven't seen the film. So if we think about the way that we think, and as I've already said, we can split that into conscious thought processes and unconscious, then the conscious thought processes relate to the bit above the surface that you can see. So the bit of the iceberg that sticks out above the water. The unconscious bit relates to the huge amount of stuff, the 9/10 or the 7/8 or whatever it may be, that's going on below the surface. There's a lot of thought processes. There's a lot of things going on at an unconscious level that we're not aware of, but they are there and they are happening. And the reality is that we're bombarded by a lot of information every second of every day. So if I asked you to kind of come up with a number, you'd probably come up with a big number, but it's more than 3 or 5 or 20 or whatever. In terms of the amount of information per second that's coming at us from all around us, it's somewhere in the region of 2 million bits per second. And that's a little bit like if there's a nice a hole in the ceiling where you're sitting at the moment, and there are 2 million toothpicks per second falling through that hole in the ceiling, and I asked you to grab all of them in one hand, would you be able to get all of them? No. You'd be able to grab a handful. And that's the same in terms of the amount of information that we're being bombarded by. So out of those 2 million bits of information, we can take in around 130, 134 bits of information at once. And as if that wasn't enough, in our conscious mind, the bit above the ocean, we can only hold 7 plus or minus 2 bits of information at once. So as that great philosopher Homer once said, that's Homer Simpson, by the way, every time I learn something new, it pushes some of the old stuff out. So if I ask you just to become aware of the floor beneath your feet now, can you feel it? Hopefully you can. Before I asked you to become aware of it, was the floor there? Were the nerves working in your feet and in your legs? And was your brain working? You may not want to answer that at the moment. So why weren't you aware of the floor beneath your feet? Yeah, for most of us, it's not important. It's not relevant to what's going on at the moment. We know it's there, so we take it out of our conscious mind and put it into our unconscious. And when I ask you to become aware of it, you become aware of it. And because we can only hold 7 plus or minus 2 bits of information in our minds at once, that makes it a lot harder. Because I bet you're not aware of the floor beneath your feet now. Oh, I bet you are again now. So as Homer said, every time I learn something new, it pushes some of the old stuff out. That's not strictly true about learning, but it is true about what we can hold in our conscious and unconscious mind at once, in terms of what we can focus on consciously. So it's a little bit like a conveyor belt where you drop something on one end and something else falls off the other end. So like one of those penny waterfalls in arcades. So have you ever been driving somewhere and wondered, how did I get here? Or have you ever gone out of your house in the morning and wondered, did I lock the door? And have you ever gone back and checked? And was it locked? Usually, yes. And the reason is that unconsciously, you know you have to lock the door. So you do it unconsciously without being consciously aware that you've locked the door. And then when you get into the car or ready to go, and that you suddenly think consciously, did I lock the door? And then you have to go back and check. And it's okay to do that. That's a very normal thing. If you have to do it 20, 25 times, then that's kind of more problematic. I mean, in one go. And as I said before, driving is an unconscious process. You can't drive a car consciously. And I remember once leading a course where at the end of the day, I said, and to prove that, when you drive home tonight, drive your car consciously. Be completely aware of everything you're doing. So how much effort you're putting in the steering wheel, how many times you change gear, what gear you're in, how much pressure you put on the clutch, what's going on outside the car, what's on the radio, all of those things, what speed you're doing, and so on and so on. And they all came back the following day and said, God, we nearly crashed on the way home last night. Well, you would. Because it's impossible to do all of those things consciously at once, which is why we come up with this idea of unconscious competence in terms of learning. It's that point where you can do those things without thinking about it at a conscious level. So if you've ever been in a car and you've been driving down the fast lane on a motorway or on a dual carriageway, and your mind's been wandering, you've been thinking about what you should be doing, what you're going to do when you get home at night, whatever it may be, I'm sure that's happened to all of us at some point. And you can nod, safe in the knowledge that at the moment no one else can see you agree with me. And if you do that and the red lights come on in the car in front, what do you do? Well, hopefully you've said brake, because that's what you do. The red lights come on in the car in front, you put your brakes on and you hurtle towards a stop, hopefully, at the back of the car. The problem is that what's happened there is that your unconscious mind has reacted to a danger signal. Because your unconscious is really good at reacting to a danger signal. That's what it's trained to do, if you like. Your unconscious's prime directive is to keep you safe. And we'll be talking a lot more about that as we go through the course. So the red lights come on in the car in front. Your unconscious knows that that means danger. So you slam your foot on the brakes. And that's great. And usually that's happened before you've even started to be consciously aware of it. And you get that kind of prickling of adrenaline going down your neck and down your arms and your back. And if this is familiar to anybody, you'll understand what I'm talking about. And when this has happened to you, does it feel like time has slowed down? Lots of people say that that's the case. And they also say that they notice things really unusually, like the dashboard's dusty, or there's a crack in the windscreen I hadn't noticed before, or that person over there is wearing the same coat as me, as you're hurtling towards the back of a car. And the fact is, for that split second in time, you are totally focused at a conscious level about what's going on, because this is about what you need to be safe, because your unconscious is really good at reacting. It's really good at reacting to danger and to external stimulus. What it's not good at is making logical, analytical decisions. But your conscious brain is very good at being analytical and being logical. So your unconscious sends a message to your conscious brain along the lines of, there's something here you need to be aware of, because there's a choice to be made. In that situation, you can either swerve to the left to avoid the car in front of you, but what has to be true for you to be able to do that? Yeah, the inside lane or the middle lane has to be free of cars, or at least cars far enough back so that you've got the space to swerve into that middle lane. Or you could swerve to the right to avoid it. But to swerve to the right, there has to be enough space between that lane, that car, and the barrier on the outside lane. And it's a big, difficult calculation to make that. Or, of course, the third choice is that you can just hold on and close your eyes and hope that the brakes work and you don't hit the car in front. But because there's an analytical decision to be made, your unconscious asks your conscious to be aware of it and make a decision. So you make a conscious decision on what you're going to do there. And this stuff happens quite rarely. So it does happen. It happens in times of great danger, as we've just described. It happens, sports people talk about being in the zone, and you may have been in that experience yourself where you're so focused on what you're doing that you don't notice anything else that's going on around you. I've seen that in offices where people have been so focused on what they're doing that they don't notice people talking around them or background noise, or even when somebody talks to them. So that's about being in the zone. Psychologists call this the flow state. So this is a kind of choice to be completely focused. And Buddhists talk about mindfulness. And you may have come across mindfulness before. It's certainly a kind of a common and a popular thing to think about at the moment. And Buddhists call it the being 100% present in the present. And so the implication there is, for that split second in time, that 7 plus or minus 1 bit of information in your conscious brain is completely aligned with what's going on. And that's unusual, because most of the time we use one or two of those channels when we're talking to somebody. And this is the important bit, because when we're talking to somebody, we're quite easily distracted by cars going past the window, things that we're listening to, things that pop into our mind, like I've got to pay that bill or whatever it may be. So to be able to focus entirely on the person in front of you helps you make a better decision, because the more information you take in, the better a decision you make, whatever that's about. But in this situation, it's about making a decision about how you're going to communicate with the person in front of you. What choice do I need to make? What approach do I need to take next to be able to get the message across more effectively? And so for me, NLP calls this total focus uptime. It's the same thing as that split second of danger, or being in the zone, or being in the flow state. It's the same thing. So the more conscious we can be about what's going on in our unconscious, the more effective we're going to be as a communicator, because the more information we can take in from the people around us. So that's my kind of view on conscious and unconscious. The more conscious we are, the more analytical, the more choice we've got. The more unconscious we are, the less choice we have and the less opportunity to change the results that we get. Because, you know, as we've said, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And in the next section, we're going to talk about the difference between perception and reality and how it is that some people see the world very differently than us, and what happens, how that does actually take place. So I look forward to seeing you on the next one.